hear arguments pro and con, and you will have an opportunity to ask questions. In case you don't know, this is election. You will start receiving your ballots next week in the mail, and then you you can vote any time between then and August 30th. You can mail them in. You can on August 30th there will be what are called election drop-off centers, and those will be identified in the ballot you receive. And you could take your ballot to one of those places if you'd like to do that. And those centers will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. To introduce myself, I'm Joanne Rich from the League of Women Voters. I'm a longtime League of Women Voters member. And just so you know, I don't live in San Luis Obispo. In fact, none of us from the League working tonight live in San Luis Obispo. And this is intentional. That we do each other's cities in that way. We not only give the impression of being fair, but we are fair because we're not going to vote in this election. Sitting here is Emily Penfield, who's the timer, and she's going to flash signs at these people with, at appropriate moments. They have seen the signs. Behind me are Sarah Horn and our Arlene Powers, and they will are sorting the questions to weed out duplicates. And what our intention tonight is to start with the questions that are asking for information, and then move on towards questions that are more, shall I use the word, argumentative. And then Boyd and Carrie are passing out cards, and at any time you can raise your hand and ask for a card, and they'll bring you one. Our speakers are divided into pro and con up here. Andrew Carter and Lauren Brown, Devin Reese and Matt Blackstone. And is that right? Yes, that's right. You're kind of in an angle from me. The format is going to be there. Each side will have an opening of 20 minutes, and they can use that 20 minutes however they wish. And then there will be a five-minute rebuttal period. Again, each side can use that 5 minutes as they wish. We will start in this section with the pros, because the pros always have the burden of proof, whether it's a traditional debate or on the ballot, because if you're trying to change something, you have the burden of proof about that. Then we will move to the question period. And they, as I say, I will ask the questions, but you submit your questions, and they will sort them for me. And then each side will have 2 minutes, although my experience has been that now and again a question will elicit a lot of comments, and I'll, with the speaker's consent, extend the time. And then we will go to concluding statements. Each person will get 2 minutes. We will do pro-con, and that will be it. So, without further comment from me, we'll go first to the pro side.
Hi, I'm Andrew Carter. I'm a city council member here in San Luis Obispo. I was first elected in 2006 and then was re-elected last fall. Also speaking for the yes side, I'm here on the yes side, is Lauren Brown, who is one of the co-chairs of the volunteer committee, San Luis Obispo Citizens for Fiscal Responsibility, which is formed to fight for a yes vote on both measures A and B. First thing I want to do is thank the League of Women Voters for holding these forums. I've obviously participated in these when I've been a candidate, and they do a fantastic job of providing information to all of us. Obviously, I want to thank police and fire for being here, and thank AGP Video, which is taping this. And just so you know, this will be running on Channel 21 on Charter Cable. You're probably used to political things being on Channel 20, which is the city's channel, but because the laws are very scrupulous in the state about the city not being able to use resources, it's on a non-city channel, Channel 21. At any rate, I'll start, and we have a PowerPoint. Okay, there we go. We are urging you to vote yes on Measure A, which will support pension reform, and yes on Measure B, which would repeal binding arbitration. That's the website of Citizens for Slow, the volunteer committee. So my part of the presentation, I'm going to explain why City Council has put these measures on the ballot. And it's very sense. It's about dollars and cents, and it's about City Council's effort to try to gain control of our budget. So let me just illustrate. This chart shows what the personnel costs for the city for our general fund are. It actually goes back to 93. I've highlighted two different bars, the 2000 bar and the 2010 bar. And you can see, now this, as you see, I've divided it between before binding arbitration and after binding arbitration. The red line there is for the fire department cost of living increases. The blue is for the police department. And prior to binding arbitration, we provided increases that met or exceeded cost of living, about what you'd think if you're providing a cost of living adjustment to your employees. I actually have data going back to 88, and that's true from there forward. So binding arbitration was passed in 2000. What happened? Immediately, police and fire cost of living increases started escalating. And this illustrates how just the existence of binding arbitration changed the negotiation process, even if it's not specifically used. It wasn't specifically used until 2006. Why is that? Because as an employer, you learn that if your employees take you to arbitration, they're going to do better in some way than your best and final offer. That's just the way it is. The arbiter is going to give them something. So what happens is you offer more than you really feel you should, just as an effort to try to avoid going to arbitration. So that's what happened before it was actually used. Then the police department decided to use binding arbitration for the 2006 to 2009 contract. Now let me just tell you what the city offered. This was for a four-year contract. Inflation during that time period ended up being 11%. The city offered the police department 20% over those 4 years. They turned that down. So we ended up offering something that was actually twice inflation. Just so you know, the fire department accepted it. But the police said, we think we can do better. So they went to arbitration, and what did the arbiter do? He gave the sworn officers on the street a 30% increase over the 4 years, and the dispatch, the people who work 911, a 37% increase over 4 years. Again, inflation was 11%. Now, just so you know, a lot of people in the private sector don't sort of know how pay increases come in the public sector. Everyone gets a cost of living adjustment. Then if you are early on in your service, you also get what are called step-in grade, generally every year, every other year, when you're first starting off. So there were employees who, during that 4 years, also received four step-in grade increases. You put that together with the 30%. There were employees over 4 years who got a 57% increase if they were patrolmen on the street, if they were dispatched, 65%. Again, inflation was just 11%. What did that cost the city? We budgeted $1.8 million. The cost for the first year was $5.8 million because it was retroactive. It didn't come out until 2008. Unbudgeted $4 million. The ongoing unbudgeted cost is $2.5 million. To put that in perspective, City Council just closed a $4.4 million budget gap, so $2.5 million is more than half of it, and Measure Y brings us about $5.5 million. So it's very significant cost for this one award. And just so you know, that was just for 70 employees. We have 350 now for the entire city. What I also want to talk about is what happened. What did we have to cut? Because, again, we have no magic purse. So we immediately made cuts. We made cuts of $1.6 million in streets and sidewalks. We made cuts to parks and open space programs. A key cut that we made, we had been planning to add, and had promised it as part of the Measure Y campaign, to add a neighborhood weekend nighttime patrol, police patrol. Because of these increases in pay, we had to cancel that program. So we literally had a situation where higher pay for our police officers meant fewer policemen and women on the street. So that's the impact of binding arbitration on our wages. It's very real, and it's very serious. So let's talk about inflation. Now, one of the reasons on my charts I went all the way back to 93 is because the city and most of the state, before and after 2000, what was called a PERS holiday or pension holiday. At that point in time, CalPERS, which is the state pension fund that we participate in, most cities participate in, state employees participated in, was overfunded, so they reduced how much we had to contribute. And so that's why you see that red line for pensions falling down. The black line is inflation, the blue line is wages. And it just so happened, while our costs were down, the city and most of the state sweetened the pension formulas for our employees. Prior to that time, police and fire had what's called a 2% at 50 formula. What does that mean? The 50 means that's how early you can retire at. You don't have to retire then, but you can retire as early as 50. If the 2 at 50, if you retired at 50, you take your number of years of service and multiply by 2%. So if you worked 30 years and retired at 50, you'd get a 60% pension of your final highest pay. We increased that to 3% at 50. So 30 times 3 is 90% instead of 30 times 2 being 60%. And that was done retroactively. So literally, you could have worked your entire career except for one day at the old rate. And $1.5 million is more than we are currently spending on the entire fire department. That's how serious the issue. Just for pension, not for pay and benefits, other benefits, just for pensions. So I think you can see why we're adamant about getting our costs under control. So there you have it. It's dollars and cents. We are serving a nonpartisan position. I happen to be a Democrat. Jan Marks, who also voted to put this on the ballot, is a Democrat. Kathy Smith, who's here today, one of the other councilmen is a, members, is a Democrat. Dan Carpenter also voted for this, has declined to state. This is not an effort to take away our bargaining rights of our employees. I've been a union member at the times I've taught at Quest in Cal Poly. My wife teaches at Cal Poly. She's a union member. My mom was the member in her life when she was working for two different. It's simply about controlling our costs, because if we don't control our costs, we're going to be facing a very serious situation. We're already reducing our employees through attrition. That has included some reductions in public safety employees, although we're continuing to maintain our constant staffing that we're required. But if we don't get our costs under control, that's when our public safety staffing and other staffing could really be jeopardized. And I'll turn it over to Lauren. So you just push the arrow forward.
Good evening. My name is Lauren Brown, and I would like to add my thanks to the League of Women Voters for this wonderful service. And I welcome the representatives of the police and fire to join with us in providing this information opportunity for all the citizens. I think it's an excellent opportunity for everybody to become well informed about the issues. I thought I would start my comments with some personal ones. I'm a retired scientist, entrepreneur, and for the 2.5 years since I did retire, I've been doing some fun things like traveling. When I started engaging in our community again last fall and winter, I soon became aware of a very important issue facing the city. I started learning that the city was facing some very significant deficits in its budget. I also learned about the recommendations that came out of the Citizens Task Force that was organized by the our city manager, Katie Lichtig. There were quite a few very useful recommendations embedded in that report, and I think a number of them are already being implemented. But there were two that could not go forward without voter approval, and that's why we're here tonight. There are two issues. For some bizarre reason that nobody seems to understand, it is possible for the city council to increase pension benefits anytime they want without having to go to the voters for approval. But if you decrease it by a nickel, you have to go to the voters for approval. It was, I think, probably some kind of a mistake that was made in the original design of the city charter. Or it was deliberately put there in order to slow down any effort to modify pensions in any direction except up. The other issue that became necessary to go to the voters about was the pay and benefits associated with the public safety. And what got in the way there was mandatory binding arbitration. The impacts of that have been severe. I started asking my friends, well, is anybody going to do anything about this? Well, before you know it, I ended up being a co-chair of the Citizens Committee that has been formed to urge our voters to vote yes on both of these measures. So let me go forward here. We want to give you some quick reasons why you should support Measure A. Let's start with that. Measure A is the one that would remove the barrier of requiring a vote by the citizens to approve any decrease in pension benefits. And as Andrew has very clearly shown, the pension costs in this community are just skyrocketing. It's really unsustainable. That is my deep concern. We have created, not just our community, but it's the larger world around us, that has created circumstances that are making our pension costs just skyrocketing. Our community can't afford this. We have to do something. So that is the bottom line here. The second reason I would like to point out is that because of the current retirement formulas that are in place, it is possible for a police officer to retire as early as age 50. And per the formula, the amount of pension could be as high as $93,000. So the average age when people are actually retiring is not 50. The average age in our city employee group is actually a little under 57. Now, if you study the actuarial tables, which I doubt many of you do, but I checked it, and I found out that the expected lifetime of somebody retiring at age 57 is 25 years. 25 years times nearly $100,000 is a lot of money. Let me run along here a little more quickly. Firefighters can retire at the same age, 50, with as much as $71,000. Let's see. I think I got... Okay. So some reasons for... number four. There are 15 employees who are retired already from the city who each get more than $100,000. And most city employees are not contributing anything to their pensions. The police do, but the interesting thing is that the city offset that with a 9% increase in pay. Let's go to Measure B. Measure B is the one that would repeal binding arbitration. Most cities in California are not permitted by the Constitution to use mandatory binding arbitration for a very simple reason. Binding arbitration delegates important authority to someone who is not accountable to the voters. That has been deemed twice by the state Supreme Court to be unconstitutional. We're a charter city. If we want to do that, we can. But it's not advisable because we have no recourse if the decision is made by an arbitrator and we find it unacceptable. We have to accept it. So there are only 4% of cities in California that use it. Reason number three for supporting Measure B. Andrew has already covered these numbers, so I'm not going to go over it in detail. But in 2008, there was an award that resulted in a one-time $4 million award and $2.5 million every year. Reason number four, the unbudgeted cost, well, I just went over this, $4 million and $2.5 million. And let's go to reason number five. We've had to resort to cutbacks across the board in all kinds of areas. That's not what the voters wanted and expected when they approved Measure Y. I think with that, I will conclude with urging you to vote yes on both of these measures. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now go to the con side, and again, they will have 20 minutes total.
Are we running time now?
Pardon? Yeah, as soon as, yes. Okay, start now, Emily. They weren't clear.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Matt Blackstone. I'm the president of the Police Officers Association here in San Luis Obispo. I'd like to also thank the League of Women Voters and also the participants that came here to inform the members of the public who showed up to be educated voters.
My name is Devin Reese, San Luis Obispo City Firefighters. I'm a paramedic, and I've been with the city for about 14 years, 13 or 14, excuse me, 11 of those as a firefighter paramedic.
Okay, we're going to go through some of this initial information fairly quickly because I think most of the people here are aware of what's going on in terms of the election. There is an election. Ballots will be mailed out next week, and there's two measures on the ballot. Those measures are binding arbitration and what's being called pension reform. Now, let me talk briefly about how this election happened. As Andrew said, it was called by the City Council. The City Council created a special process that never existed in the city. So they actually passed a municipal ordinance or an ordinance to our municipal code, which is the city's constitution. So they changed the city's constitution to allow them to do this by mail. That was one initial concern. But the other issue is that they brought both of these issues forward, these measures forward, the repeal of binding arbitration and the Measure A from the City Council. Five members, and I don't believe it was five on both issues, but five members brought these issues forward to repeal a voter-enacted provision, which was binding arbitration. That was brought forward by the police and firefighters in 2000, and signatures were gathered from the voters, and it was voted in. So let's talk specifically about the measures. Measure A, what does Measure A do? I think it's commonly being referred to as pension reform. Which is misleading. There's a lot of misleading information out in this election. But to call that issue pension reform is essentially misleading the voters. The only thing that measure does is it changes the language of Charter Section 1105 to take away the voter oversight. Right now, you as registered voters of the city have the right to have your voice heard if there's a pension reduction in the city. It strips that away. So I'm not sure why anybody would think it would be a good idea to give their oversight away to a group of five people, five politicians on City Council, but that's what that measure does. It does nothing to reduce pensions or compensation. All it does is strip away the voter oversight. It's also important when we're talking about that to mention that the police and firefighters have actively gone forward to the city and supported pension reform. The firefighters brought forward a pension reform, a reasonable pension reform, within the past couple months to the city, and essentially the City Council turned their back on that offer. So it's important for people to understand that we support pension reform. We know that there are changes that need to be made in the pension system, and we have been willing participants in discussions with the city about those changes that need to be made.
So the next measure is Measure B, and this is Charter Section 1107, which is the impartial binding arbitration as a conflict resolution procedure. It was added by the voters in 2000. This was something that the citizens wanted. The citizens gathered the signatures, and the citizens passed, which is in contrast to the politicians that are putting this measure on the ballot or are in favor of it now. So the people that do better with binding arbitration are the citizens, not the politicians, which is why they're having such a hard time with it. What it does is it allows, again, the politicians to impose state fire station closures or limiting the number of paramedics that are on duty. It is a measure that it doesn't reduce pensions or pay in any way. All it does is eliminate that conflict resolution process. So why do we need impartial binding arbitration? Well, the first thing is that police and firefighters can't strike. And we don't want to strike, but we can't. And so we needed a process that allowed us some sort of conflict resolution in a proper way, or in a fair way, in a balanced way, that allows the citizens to win and that allows for the best level of service for the citizens and public safety. So who is this? This is your police officers, your firefighters, and your dispatchers. It's not your management. It's not the top 10 pension receivers in the city. None of those are covered by binding arbitration. This is not for those people. This is for the boots on the ground. This is for the people that are answering the 911 and responding to the 911 every day. So what is arbitration? It's a neutral conflict resolution process. It's not favored to one side or the other. The only people this favors is the citizens. So what exactly is it? The first step in the Charter Section 1105 is negotiations. Both sides need to come to the table in good faith and negotiate. And that process, obviously, is to begin to work both sides together to meet in the middle. If you've worked and worked to get to the middle and you still have disagreements, then the next step is impasse, and that, again, is spelled out in the Charter section. So impasse is declared. That means the two sides are no longer able to talk or can't get any closer together. So it's time to bring in a mediator. And a mediator is much like a marriage counselor in that their decision isn't binding, but it's they're there to work to bring the two sides together. And as a final step, as a last resort, it's only been used one time, and that would be arbitration. And the arbitration is the cost of that is split 50-50 between both sides. So again, this is all in the charter. It was made it's as fair and balanced as possible. So it's a 3-member panel. Each side chooses a member, and then those two members choose a third member that is an arbitrator. And that arbitrator is state licensed, they're board certified, and they're typically retired judges. At this point, it's important to note that all these discussions and the mediation, everything has been going on behind, you know, in private between the two sides. But once arbitration is reached, it's time to bring this to the public. This is a public proceeding, and the transcripts are public. So there, at this point, the citizens need to know what's going on, and they need to be aware of what the issues are. And so it's important that this proceeding be public. So the evidence and testimony, it's a very formal procedure, much like a court proceeding in that their evidence and testimony is presented. You're under oath when you give that testimony. And and once that's presented, the panel then decides issue by issue on which way to go. Are we going to have a paramedic on every fire engine, or are we just going to have a paramedic on every other engine? And how does the arbitrator decide these things? There's two factors. Number one is the economic conditions of the city and in the state, the CPI. And the second one is the comparison cities. And this is the one that needs some explaining, so I'll go through it with you. What you're looking at is the police officers, the firefighters, and management's comparison cities. So if you read horizontally, you see the ones that are in common with all three groups, and then down toward the bottom, they deviate slightly. These are picked by geographical size, population, tax base, cost of housing, maybe the call loads of the different departments, response times, the number of high-risk facilities, hazardous materials facilities, et cetera, chemical production facilities, and the level of services offered. Do they have a SWAT team? Do they have paramedics? Do they have hazardous materials specialists? Do they have undercover narcotics task force? So all those play into it. So from these cities, this is the gauge by which the arbitrator decides, both up and down. This is not one-sided. This is not strictly for the city and the politicians or strictly for the police and firefighters. This gauge can go either way, up or down.
Okay.
In terms of arbitration in general, the process is, it's used throughout our society. It's considered reasonable and cost-effective, and it's an alternative to litigation. In this case, it's an alternative to labor actions. Again, as Devin touched on, you know, police and firefighters don't strike. We don't want to strike. We would never let a labor dispute turn into a disruption in the service to the community. So that is probably the key issue and why a third-party process needs to be retained in our city charter. You know, essentially, if stripping binding arbitration away gives the council full authority to impose their last best offer. It takes away any incentive for council to negotiate fairly with the employee groups. They know, ultimately, if they have a majority of council, three people, they can impose that offer onto the employee groups. As Devin said, it's a public proceeding. It's something that anybody could attend those hearings, watch what's going on. It's also public record. The entire arbitration transcripts are on the Police Officer Association website. So anybody that wants to know what happened and what testimony occurred during that process can look at that information. It's public. It's not anything that's hidden behind the scenes. That process can be initiated by either side. In the case of the 2006 arbitration between the police and fire, or the police and the city, it was mutually declared impasse. Both sides agreed that there was no further agreement going to be reached on those contract discussions. You want to move on, or do you want to talk about it?
So, to conclude, there's two measures on the ballot. Measure A is actually a measure to remove your right to vote on the issue. As the gentleman to my right said, it's a mistake. It's a mistake that you have the right to vote on an issue. It's a mistake that the men and women in the city of San Luis Obispo deserve the right to vote on this issue. Now more than ever, when the politicians in Wall Street have you know, derailed the train, it's not a mistake that the voters have a say. The voters absolutely need a say in this issue. It's vital. And that's why Measure A, that's why the provision has been in the charter for decades. The city charter, or the city's constitution, if you will, requires a vote of the people. It's not a mistake. It's there by design. That's Measure A. Measure B, it removes the impartial binding arbitration. It removes the process that was put in place by the voters. The politicians would like you to remove it, but it's important to note this is put in place by the voters for a reason. It's for public safety. It's for the community. It's for the citizens. This provides a vital oversight. With this measure, I can speak to fire department. Fire department, before this measure, it was okay to have two people on a fire engine. It was okay to only have two paramedics in the city. But with binding arbitration, with the comparison cities, we were able to demonstrate, no, you don't have two people on a fire engine. You have three people on a fire engine. And the fire engine that's downtown, covering the critical downtown area, you have four people on that engine, and you have a paramedic at every station. This isn't about politics. This isn't about numbers, other than the numbers of employees and people doing the 911 service that are delivering that service. And the city demands the best, and the city expects the best, and the city deserves the best. And that's why this measure was passed by the citizens in 2000. So neither of these measures changes the pensions. Neither of these measures changes the pay. Neither of these measures changes any of those charts. Both of these give the power to the politicians and take it away from the people, or take it away from a neutral party that looks at all the factors and it makes a decision based on what's best for the community.
Yeah, and while we still have some time, I wanted to touch on some issues that came up and some things that might come up in the question and answer process. I want everybody in here to pay attention to a particular year or a couple of year data set. And that year is right around 2001, 2002, somewhere in there. Now, the information that's on Andrew's chart is shocking. There's some shocking numbers up there. You know, people look at that and one would wonder, how do we get here? How can we get back from here? Now, it's a purposeful misrepresentation that you're hearing on the issues of pension costs. What you're not being told is in 2002, 2003, the city's contribution rate for public safety pensions was nothing for public employees that aren't public safety, and it was 4.4% for public safety employees. The public safety employees at that time were paying twice the rate that the city was. Now, if that's the baseline you use to gauge that slope that you're looking at for increases in pension costs, then absolutely, it's going to be a dramatic increase in what you see. Personnel costs, it's the same issue. And I'm not sure what the solution is when we're talking about Social Security and those issues. Do I work as a police officer until I'm 66 years of age? It's not going to happen. My body won't last that long. I'll be lucky if I reach 50. The majority of the police officers I hired on with and that hired at the time I worked here, more have retired on service-related injuries than have retired on longevity. Very few retire at 50 or shortly thereafter with service disabilities. The other thing I wanted to touch on, and again, I'm sure it'll probably come up in questions, is the time that Andrew touched on briefly, this pension or PERS holiday that we had. I think the estimates I've heard are somewhere in the $25 million range for what the city saved or what the city didn't pay into pension contributions. Now, the question has been asked, what did the city do with all that money? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows other than during that time the city spent that money and didn't plan for the time when they should have known that pension costs would increase. We might have a magic purse if we had set some of that $25 million aside during the time when the city wasn't paying for pensions.
With that, we have a brief video.
In emergency medical situations, response times are critical, and an increase in response times can absolutely cost lives.
Because of the experience I've had as a police officer in San Luis Obispo, I understand how important it is to be able to respond quickly with strength and authority to solve problems.
A really well-qualified professional public safety workforce is vital, because that way people feel safe in their homes. And if they don't feel safe in their homes, not too much else really matters.
The experts in public safety are the people that actually perform the duties. They are the firefighters, paramedics, police officers that are there day in and day out serving the citizens of our community.
The very key part of managing is listening to the people who are actually doing the work.
The police and the firefighters, the ones, the people with the boots on the ground, are the ones that really understand what it takes to keep our community safe.
The public safety people went to the citizens of the city of San Luis Obispo for a vote, and the citizens of San Luis Obispo voted in binding arbitration.
Public safety should have a key seat at the table, and this is about a process. And what binding arbitration does is it really enables our protective service personnel to have that voice at the table.
If Measure B passes, I think it would have a very adverse effect. I can't see into the future, but I don't think it'll be effective.
If Measure B passes, politicians can cut public safety at will.
I'm very concerned that there could be staff layoffs, that there could be station closures, and I'm also very concerned that our community wouldn't be as safe.
When other cities passed this, the politicians turned right around and cut public safety.
The citizens of our community deserve more than just politics. It is about the safety of every individual that lives in this community.
They're pitting citizens against their employees, and in my mind, that's just wrong. The employees do not work for the city council. They work for the city, you know, and the city council is treating them like scum.
Government's first responsibility is to keep us safe. When it comes to public safety, we shouldn't play political games.
Public safety is critical.
For our community.
Please vote no.
Vote no.
Vote no.
Keep San Luis Obispo safe. Please vote no on Measure B.
That's it? Okay. We're going now to the rebuttal section, and each side will have 5 minutes to have a rebuttal on what was presented. So we go to pros first. 5 minutes.
I think we would actually agree that this is about public safety. You saw that video. And as I pointed out earlier, how fast our costs are escalating. The reality of things is if we don't get control of our cost, that's when our public safety staffing is going to be compromised. Just so you know where binding arbitration leads, you've probably all heard of Vallejo. Vallejo went through bankruptcy, is still trying to get out of bankruptcy, and guess what? Vallejo has had binding arbitration for decades. They said that citizens do better with binding arbitration. Actually, that's not the case. Why is that not the case? Because you, the people, cannot overrule the arbiter. If you don't like a decision that city council makes, every 2 years, three of us are up for election and you can toss us out. If you really don't like what you can do, we do, you can have a recall election and toss all five of us out. So with the process that we're proposing, actually, this is gives you all final control because you all vote for the council. And as we know, our public safety unions endorse candidates, give money to candidates, so they can participate in that process as well, the democratic process. They talked about how they only used it once. You saw the impact of the costs. Our fear is that it will be used again, and that will drive our costs even higher. With respect to Measure A, what we're really trying to do is trying to speed up the process that we can realize savings. Under any scenario, we have to negotiate with our employees, and they would have to agree to a two-tier system. You may have seen in the paper how Morro Bay has moved to a two-tier system. Santa Maria has moved to a two-tier system. The county is moving to a two-tier system. The reason they've been able to do it real quickly is because once they've got an agreement with their unions, they don't have to go out and have an election and have that take place. That's really, I don't know if you have anything you want to say.
Just a couple things. I take note that the representatives here on my left are making a big point that Measure A takes voting rights away from the citizens. Their argument would carry more weight with me if in 2003, when the city council increased pension benefits, that they would have led the charge that, no, we should have this approved by the voters. That didn't happen. You know, the reality is that going for a vote by the people is a very time-consuming matter, and it really gets in the way of implementing any savings. And let's not lose sight of the very compelling matter that the city of San Luis Obispo is facing very severe deficits. The city is just having to cut in all kinds of places. That's what we're trying to approve. The last thing that I would like to mention is that a number of Democrats on the video were in favor of the no vote on both of these. I'm a Democrat. Most of the senior leadership happens to be Democrats. And let me point out that Jack O'Connell's received over $40,000 in contributions.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you. San Luis Obispo Democrats have endorsed no on both measures A and B. Measure A, the first argument we heard was that it was a mistake. Now we heard the argument from the politicians that we need to speed up the process. This is not time for politicians. This is time for the citizens' voice to be heard. This is an important matter now more than ever. We need the citizens' voice to be heard, not the process to be sped up and your voice silenced. He also talked about 2 years. If you don't like the decision the council makes, 2 years, they change. 2 years is far too long to have a fire station closed. 2 years is far too long to be without a paramedic in your district where you live. 2 years is far too long for this community to be without the top level of service that they deserve and demand. And we can compromise on a lot of things, and we'll negotiate, and we'll work on our pensions, and we'll work on our pay, and we'll work on all those issues that Mr. Carter would like to work on. And we will be happy to do that. We've done it in the past, we're doing it now, and we'll do it in the future. But what we won't do is compromise the public safety. We won't do that. The citizens deserve better. The citizens deserve better than politics with both of these issues. briefly, I'd like to discuss some of the things, some of the positive things that have come out of arbitration. Again, we're going to touch on the staffing levels in the fire department. What does it mean? What's the difference between having two people on a fire engine and having three people on a fire engine? What's the difference between having a paramedic on the fire engine and the paramedic coming from downtown if you live out on Los Osos Valley Road and Madonna Road area? Those are two things that have come out of binding arbitration, and they're big. For someone living in that area, to have a paramedic there within 4 minutes is vital. And that service is delivered because of binding arbitration, because of what the citizens put in the charter in 2000. So binding arbitration has been a very positive thing for this community.
Okay. Briefly, with regard to Measure A, in terms of the it does strip over the voter oversight. But Mr. Carter talked about speeding up the process. The process could have been sped up during the last 2 years with the negotiations with the Police Officers Association. During that 2 years' time, we did exactly what the city asked. We took a zero compensation year. We asked for nothing. We were also willing to discuss pension reform, second-tier pensions. The firefighters have led the charge in speeding up that process, as Mr. Carter says. Now, there was an alternative. And most people don't know this. There was an alternative to that measure that was offered by the Firefighters Association. And what that alternative was that if a mutual agreement was reached on a pension reduction between the employee group and the city, that it took away that voter requirement. So you would still see Measure A as a modification of the charter, but that modification would not have to go to the voters if there was a mutual agreement reached to reduce pensions. It would only have to go to the voters if council was intending to impose a pension reduction onto the employees. So that's an important distinction. Council elected not to take that option. They had that option to put that on the ballot instead of a full repeal of that voter oversight. And again, you haven't heard anything other than these numbers that are based on flawed data. Are they factual? Yeah, they're factual, but again, when you base the cost increase off of a year when you're paying nothing, you're going to come out with some shocking numbers. I was a young Marine in 1987. I didn't pay for housing. If I compared that to my cost of housing now, it would be pretty shocking. That's what's being done by this group that's pushing these measures forward. So I would encourage people to seek out the data and become educated on the misinformation that's out there, because that's just one example of the gross misrepresentations that are being made to push these measures through to give more power to the politicians.
Thank you. We're going to go to the question and answer period, and we have about an hour for that. But right before we do that, the speakers have all been unanimous in thanking the league. And I wanted to tell you that, you know, we used to be able to hold these forums and not pay for the room. Those days have gone. I don't have to give you all the reasons. We know them. So if you would like to help the league pay for the cost of this room, you can make a donation at the league table that's in the back on your way out. Thank you. Okay, question and answer. I'm going to start with the cons for a change. And this first question is, who is supporting each side? I want you to just answer for yourselves. We know the police and fire, but who else is supporting the no vote?
I think it's important to note that a lot of the blue-collar organizations are supporting no on measures A and B. The nurses in particular is one that's near and dear. They, as a paramedic, we work with them every day, and they understand the vital need for good quality EMS and in a rapid amount of time, and they recognize that you can't compromise on that. As the video says, you can't play politics with public safety, which is what they're doing. And so because of that, the nurses are one that are supportive of us. Also teachers. The list goes on and on. This is, again, going back to 2000, this is something that was put on by the people. And so this is a measure that's opposed by the people.
Yeah, and I don't have a list of all the supporters for our measures. Some of them include politicians. A lot of them are the blue-collar workers here, not only at the police and fire departments, but we do have a lot of support from members of the general city workers, because I think everybody understands what the consequence is when you give full control of any issue over to a small group of people and strip away that voter oversight provision.
Okay. The pros.
Well, you have four of the five current members of City Council who are supportive of a yes vote on Measure A and Measure B. You have virtually all prior elected officials in the city, and that means people on one side of the spectrum like Dave Romero and people on the other side of the spectrum like Christine Mulholland. We have, Jiminy Christmas, probably 60 to 80 endorsers right now of just common people, citizens here in the community that are on our website, citizensforslow.org. And also the key thing to note is that, obviously, although I'm participating in this forum, all three of the co-chairs of Slow Citizens for Fiscal Responsibility are volunteers. So that's actually been what's most encouraging to me in this process, is you have people volunteering their time and contributing their money on our side of things. They don't have anything personal to gain. It's all about their belief in good government.
And let me just add that virtually every dollar that we've collected to fund this campaign have come from local contributors.
Okay. We'll go now to the pros, answering first, and then the cons. When will we see this dollar savings if we repeal binding arbitration?
Okay. Basically, it's a two-step process, and that sort of explains why we're doing this now. Basically, all the contracts with our employees are up at the end of the year, and normal timing, we would begin our negotiations after Labor Day. So that's why we're having our ballot in August. But you saw what happened just by having binding arbitration, how it started increasing costs before it was used, and you saw once it was used how bad the impact. So it would be a function of whatever contract that we are able to agree with our public safety employees, police and fire, and that new contract will begin on January 1st. The important thing to note is that labor relations in the state are highly regulated. There's the Myers-Milius-Brown Act, which requires both sides to negotiate in good faith. That also requires mediation, so there are many things in state law to protect our employees. And just I wanted to point out, there are 482 cities in California. Only 21 of 482 cities have binding arbitration. Two got rid of it last year, and we're looking to do the same thing. Do you have anything to add to that?
No, that's okay.
Okay, to the con side. When will we see dollar savings if we repeal binding arbitration?
I think it's important to note that had politics not gotten in the way, you would have already seen changes. The firefighters have met with the city several times with offers of changes to the pension, with offers of changes to the pay. I know they don't like to talk about it, and it's a mystery to us as to why they haven't done that, but we've offered concessions. We've offered those. So those changes could have already taken place had politics not gotten involved. And, you know, I think it's important to note during these conversations that attacking the workers does nothing to solve these budget problems.
Yeah, and I can touch on that. In terms of when you'll see savings for repealing binding arbitration, you won't. Repealing binding arbitration strips away a conflict resolution process between your public safety unions and the city, or in this case, you know, during negotiations. Andrew touched on an important issue. He talked about Myers-Milius-Brown Act and the obligation to bargain in good faith. Now, some of you might remember, most of you probably remember the litigation that was filed by the Police Officers Association. It was over that very issue. The city refused to bargain in good faith with the association with regard to the ballot proposals. And that was, you know, so that's the alternative that we find ourselves in. Now, in terms of in dollar savings, what you're not going to hear our politicians talk about is the increases that they've agreed to with some of our city staff. The most recent, probably the most exaggerated example is our city manager. So those things are outside the realm of finding arbitration, and that is an extreme example of what five people can do. Mr. Carter led the vote to increase management compensation in 2006. So I don't think you're going to see any cost savings when you turn things over to the politicians unless they're intent on imposing a contract on the employees.
Thank you. We're ready for the next question. What resolution process will replace binding arbitration if we repeal binding arbitration? That would be, let's start with the con people.
Well, there may be still an arbitration provision, non-binding, that will apply under certain circumstances, but it does essentially strip away the conflict resolution process that's in the city charter. And I would encourage everybody in here to look at the city charter and look at Charter Section 1107. It says nothing about salaries. It's a conflict resolution process. So there is a grievance process. Most of the issues that involve the grievance process are simply to try to work towards a solution. There's no, there will be no binding resolution process if and when arbitration is taken from the city charter.
One thing that's important to note also, we can talk about Myers, Millies, Brown, and we can talk about the alternative to arbitration, but the reality is none of those measures protect public safety. None of those measures protect the number of fire stations that are open. None of those measures protect the number of paramedics that we have in the city. That ultimately is left to the politicians to play politics with, which is what they used to do back in the 90s and the 80s. It was okay before arbitration to have two people on a fire engine. It was okay to leave a section of town without a paramedic. That's because of politics. With arbitration, you have those people where they need to be in all areas of town.
Yeah, and I'll give you, in the 30 seconds we have left, I'll give you one fairly compelling statistic that talks about contract negotiations between the Police Officers Association and the city. Over a 10-year period of time, during that 10 years, there was 4 contracts negotiated. During that 10-year period, the police officers were 73 months without contract over the course of that 10 years during the 4 various contracts. They varied from time when we went to impasse or without a contract until the time the contract was resolved.
Go ahead to the probe side.
Well, first off, actually binding arbitration slowed down the process. Those 73 months, 30 months was while we were waiting for the arbiter to rule. It came 2.5 years in. They had talked earlier about how they'd went without a year and a half without a contract. What's important to note, he also mentioned about how binding arbitration, they were trying to use that with the police lawsuit, which I thought very much illustrated that this isn't about the people. In other words, the police sued the city to try to stop the election. Basically, they want a democracy to be subject to binding arbitration, which just doesn't seem right to me. With respect to the arbitration award, the arbiter came from Oakland. He was a lawyer. He wasn't a judge. What you need to know, before arbitration, city police were making more than every single police department here in San Luis Obispo County, more than the sheriff's department, deputy sheriffs. After the award, they're making more than L.A., What's also interested is they were making more than Oakland. So basically you had an Oakland-based arbiter saying that folks in San Luis Obispo should be paying more for their police than he was paying for his. So I think that sort of shows where binding arbitration leads. It takes everything out of the citizens' control. What's also important to note is City Council has no plans to close fire stations, reduce the number of men and women on our fire trucks with our police department. We, in fact, have plans to add a fifth station in the Orchid and Margarita areas. So they keep saying and implying, and in fact, Eric Baskin on the Coggleden show said people will die if binding arbitration will pass. That's a direct quote. It's not about safety. We're as committed to safety as they are on City Council, and afterwards, there are a couple council members in the room, and you can talk to them about that as well.
Okay. The next question I think it's time to start with the pros. Would that sound right to you? Between sorting and...
That's fine.
That sounds good? Okay. People want to know what exactly impartial binding arbitration covers. Does it only cover salaries? So let's go to the pros.
Binding arbitration, we like to call it mandatory. They like to call it impartial. We all agree that it's binding on the citizens, and they can't overrule it. But it covers pay, benefits, and working conditions. So any change that management wants to make, and that's their argument about why they could stop the election. The election doesn't have anything to do with pay and benefits. So it covers everything that's everything to do with their pay benefits and their working conditions.
Yes, we can touch back on the comparison cities and using those as a guide to set the industry standard, to set the number of officers on the street, to set the number of firefighters in the city. And those comparison cities are the gauge for wages, hours, and working conditions. And they go up and down with the economy or with changes throughout the state. And those cities are a representative of or a gauge for San Luis Obispo to keep within those standards.
Yeah, and let me touch on one thing. The reason we like to call it impartial binding arbitration is that's what the city charter says. The city refers to it as impartial binding arbitration because that's what it was, or that's what it is as it exists in the city charter. And I'm sorry, I got myself a little sidetracked. What specifically was the question? Because I'd like to touch on it. I think it was what does binding arbitration cover?
I don't walk and chew gum at the same time.
And what binding arbitration...
Yeah, what does it cover?
Yeah, it covers issues that are basically subject to mandatory bargaining, wages, working conditions, and terms and conditions of employment. One example of an issue that went to binding arbitration that's not anything about salary or compensation was the police officers brought an issue forward that we wanted a guarantee that the city would provide health insurance for the family of a deceased officer who died in the line of duty, not at a boating accident at the lake or anything else. An officer who's killed in the line of duty, we thought it was appropriate that the city would pay for the health insurance, continue that health insurance contribution for the family while they're picking up their life in that year's time. The city steadfastly refused, and that issue went to binding arbitration. So it's those types of things that can result in binding arbitration. Is that a compensation issue? Not unless somebody loses their life in the line of duty. So that's the types of things. You're going to hear it's all about salary and money. We need to do this to save money. It's those types of things. Had we not had that process, we would have a situation today in the city that if an officer loses his life, his family is without health insurance.
Okay. I'm going to move now to discuss a little bit of the pension issue. This is time to start with the cons. Is there a realistic plan for financing pensions for police and firemen for the future?
Well, I can start on that. I think it's probably a little bit above my pay grade in terms of those are decisions that are made at the city level. And I think in large part that's why we're in the situation we're in. I talked about that 2002-2003 period when PERS was superfunded and the city wasn't paying essentially anything into PERS and what the city did to save for it. I don't believe they did anything. Going forward, I think there will be some changes made in terms of second tier. There will be, in circumstances, there will be people that are paying more for their portion of the pension contribution. Right now, the police officers and the miscellaneous employees in the police union are some of the few that pay for their pensions. City council doesn't pay for their pension contribution. So they're in the same pension system as we are. They get the same pension benefit that our dispatchers who work 24/7 get. However, they don't pay into it. So I hope that it's a joint solution, a shared solution between the line level employees and management to pay for these future increases.
I think it's also important to note that they're ignoring the fact that the pensions were funded at 100% prior to this downturn, the Wall Street in the stock market. So the pension system was healthy, and it will be healthy again. And it's time to work together and not play politics with that. And ultimately, like the charter says, the voters to decide. Now more than ever, in this critical time, it's time for the voters to decide this issue, not the politicians.
Yeah, and what Devin started to touch on, CalPERS had a $20 million return rate, the largest single return rate this past year than they've had, I think, in 14 years. So I don't buy into all the doom and gloom. I'm a little more optimistic about what our pensions are going to do and also what our city finances are going to do. I think things are starting to recover, and I think the pension system, like anything else, will recover with the economy.
Billion, not million.
Okay. Pro people.
Well, it's true that CalPERS did very well this year. What's important to know is that they have not returned to their previous peak. They reported that they were $237.5 billion. Their peak in June of 07 was $251 billion. The thing you need to know is CalPERS counts on a 7.75% per year return. So it's not just they have to get back to the $250 billion. Actually, they should have been at $338.9 billion. So CalPERS is still $100 billion behind, even after two great years of return. What's important to note, people are going to be shocked by how much we pay for our pensions. Right now, the city, for our firefighters, is paying 48% of pay. So for every $100 in regular pay, we pay $48 for pensions for firefighters. We pay $39 for our police officers. As a comparison, if you're an employer, you pay 6.2%. So the only way it's going to get back along their lines is continuing to have to pay these onerous rates for pensions. The other thing I wanted to point out, and Lauren mentioned it earlier, police is paying. They started paying in 2000. In 2000, we gave them a 16% pay increase, 9% to pay for their pensions, and still they got a 7% cost of living. So you can see just again how expensive these things are.
I'd just like to quickly add that we have hired the city council to answer these questions. It's not our responsibility to come up with how our pension is going to be paid for in the future. We have a very capable group of folks. I want to make sure that as they deliberate and come up with good solutions for this, that they can implement those changes right away and not have to wait for an approval from the voters.
Okay. A follow-up on the PERS question. this would be about Measure A. If Measure A passes, would that how would that change the city's and city employees' relationship with the PERS system?
It's not going to change it at all. The reality is that it would be virtually financially impossible for the city to leave PERS. I heard an estimate would cost the city about $100 million to leave PERS. We have no plan to leave PERS. You know, certainly they had terrible losses during the 2008 crash, but historically they have very good returns and are very well managed. So we have no plans, no desire to leave PERS.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think that brings up the question, and I think, you know, Andrew talked about it would be virtually impossible to leave PERS. He's right. The city does have an obligation to the current employees and the unfunded liability. This wouldn't change them from stripping the new employees out of CalPERS if they chose to do that. But I think something was touched on last time in terms of, you know, city council is the ones who make these decisions and are hired to make these decisions. I think, unfortunately, that's the situation we find ourselves in, not only with the failure to put aside any money when they weren't paying anything or virtually nothing for PERS, but in 2004, our city decided to restructure the CalPERS rates. So they essentially reamortized the mortgage over 30 years. And the reason they did that, in this memorandum I have from Monica Irons, or Monica Maloney at the time, was to reduce their costs at the time. So they took a lower rate, and they acknowledge in here that they know the rate's going to increase in the outside of the term. So now we find ourselves 7 years later, and the costs are going up. We find ourselves as public employees being blamed for that increase, and it's unfortunate because this problem, if it's a problem, was engineered and created by the politicians, the same ones that want full control of that pension system, and I don't think that they can be trusted with that level of ability. I think there should still be some voter oversight. Do you have anything on that?
No, I think it's just important to note that it's time to stop blaming the workers for the downturn on Wall Street, from the problems on Wall Street. You know, this is politics once again. You know, here they go again with the politics. And it's time for solutions. It's time to hear from the voters on this, not the politicians.
Okay, I'm going now. This is a question I'm going to start with the con people. And it's how do you propose to create a sustainable city with a balanced budget if we continue with binding arbitration?
I think the firefighters are going to continue doing what they've always done. We're going to work with the city. We've done it in the past. We're doing it now, and we'll do it in the future. We came to the city voluntarily in the middle of a contract and offered compensations to pay, benefits, and pensions, and we'll continue to do that. But again, what we're not going to do is play politics and gamble with public safety.
Yeah, I think touching on that, I can echo what Devin said in terms of the Police Officers Association working with the city, not only in the future, but in the past. The past 2 years, as I said, we came to negotiations with the city. A contract was agreed upon with no increases. That's what the city asked for. That's what we offered. I don't know what negotiations are going to bring next time with where the city's coming from and how they're going to find a sustainable future. I know what I would do if I were making those decisions. I wouldn't be improving a couple of blocks downtown for several hundred thousand dollars. I think the latest figure is about $685,000. I wouldn't be painting utility boxes. I wouldn't be paying the same architectural firm to redesign the bathrooms they used at Laguna Lake. So there's a lot of cost savings issues that can go on in the city. Some of them will be employee related. Hopefully some of the other ones will be spending issues that, quite honestly, the city council has issues with.
Now to the pro side. The question has to do with creating a sustainable city with a balanced budget.
With binding arbitration in place?
Yes.
Okay. Let me take a stab at this. I would say let's look at the record. The numbers that Andrew presented were very compelling. And let us keep in mind that from the very beginning, binding arbitration had a very significant inflationary effect, even before it ever got formally implemented. If you recall the graph that showed fire and police going higher than all the rest of the employee groups and higher, certainly, than the rate of inflation. Also keep in mind when issues did reach an impasse and binding arbitration was implemented, what was the record? The record was that the fire and police, although they sound very reasonable this evening, I think we have to look at what actually happened. They asked for pay increases that resulted in massive increases in pay. And they asked for more. They asked actually for lifetime medical, as I recall. So my conclusion is that binding arbitration simply is not going to work if we want to have a sustainable future.
I think you have about 30 seconds.
Yeah. My father was an Episcopal minister. Somewhere in the Bible it says you judge a tree by its fruit. And we've seen the fruit of binding arbitration in terms of the absurd runoff in costs. And that's just from one time that it's been used. And so our fear on council and why we've put this on the ballot is because we're afraid about what's going to happen the next time it's used and then what we're going to have to cut to pay for that sort of an award.
I need to make one comment.
Okay, then we'll give you a minute more and then you can have a minute more.
Thank you. I think it's important to note right now, rather than to rewrite history, again, the arbitration The entire proceedings are public, and there's a transcript for those. They're both on the city's website and the police officer's website. We'll have that information for you at the end. So rather than listening to a revised version of what occurred, read it for yourself and understand it fully.
Yeah, and with the rest of that minute, I'll give you guys some hard figures in terms of percentage increases between 2005 and 2011. Positions directly under the control of city council. One of them is the director of community development, 42% increase. Most of the increases are in the 28 to 35% range, probably, again, with the most dramatic increase of a position being directly under the control of city council being our city manager, who was brought in. I think that figure is about 60% increase over that same period of time. Going back to 2005, the increases that Ken Hampion got and now the bump that Katie got. And that was council. That was council's decision. Those five members bumped her pay rate. So.
Okay. Emily, did you give them 2 minutes?
No.
These people here? Did you give the con people 2 minutes?
One.
That was 1 minute? Whoa. Okay. 1 minute here.
I'll focus back on that binding arbitration award. Historically, the city has used comparable cities that have been agreed upon between the unions and the city, and it's always been that 50% we're looking to be in the middle of that comparable set of cities. So the binding arbitration award, the reason they got it is that the arbiter let them change the comparable set, so they removed two low-priced cities and added two high-priced ones, including Gilroy, which has binding arbitration, which has years of financial problems. But beyond that, they weren't satisfied to be at the midpoint. They wanted to be at the 85th percentile point, so near the top of the range. So again, this was how binding arbitration was used to have these way above average, way above inflation wage increases.
Okay, thank you. This next question is really, in a sense, a follow-up to a comment that was made. So I'm going to start here with the pro people, and then we'll go to the cons. We have seen how far salaries and benefits have risen and how much greater city salaries are than those in the private sector. Does binding arbitration affect these public salary levels?
Well, it most definitively affects the salary levels for police and fire, again, because they've used arbitration to get a richer comparison set, to move to the 85th percentile of that set and the like. I think what's important to understand is what's going on as well in the background. One of the things that council has voted on since the election, so basically the last 6 months, was a new compensation philosophy. So that when we redo all our pay scales for all of our employees, whether they're public safety, whether they're white collar, whether they're the people who fill the potholes on the street, what we're looking to do, historically this city, as you can see, has looked across the state for comparison cities. And we've changed that, the city council changed that, to focus more on the local market, both public and private sector. Because we feel that looking statewide, particularly when you're not filling recruiting from that statewide base, doesn't make a lot of sense. And so it tends to drive our wages way above what most of us are making, because quite frankly, I think most of us are aware here in San Luis Obispo, we don't make what we'd make in L.A. or San Francisco. There's sort of a price for living in paradise, if you will.
That was it, wasn't it? No. Was that you? Did you? You got a chance to speak to that? No, you haven't. Okay. Thank you. Yes. We've seen how far salaries and benefits have risen, and how much greater city salaries are than private sector salaries. How does binding arbitration affect these salary levels?
Well, I think I'd like to touch on one of the things Andrew talked about the management or the compensation study being revised. He is correct. It was revised. And my understanding of what I read about that was there was a little bit of a difference between the line-level employees and the management employees. I think the salaries that most people are shocked about are management salaries, and those are salaries that are directly under the control of city council. Now, what hasn't been touched upon here in terms of where the binding arbitration award took the police officers with salary levels is the recruitment and retention difficulties that the Police Officers Association or the city was having hiring police officers. It got so severe at one point that the city was paying a $500 bonus to a current employee of the city who could find somebody, a qualified police officer from another agency, to come hire onto our city. There were several officers that were hired under that program because we simply weren't attracting candidates. Part of those issues were salary.
Again, going back to the comparison cities are used as a gauge or a guide to set the industry standard for firefighters and police officers. Obviously, it's very hard to find private sector comparables, and because of that, those comparison cities are used. It was what the citizens wanted in 2000. That's why it was passed. That's why it's a fair process. And so as those cities go up, those pay and benefits would go up, and as the city those cities go down, those pay and benefits go down. It's the fair process that works both ways.
Okay. This has to do with response time now. So I'm going to start with the con people and then move to the pro. If staffing for fire, police, or any other department, I guess, is decreased due to the passage of A or B, will response times increase?
It's sort of a loaded question. I can answer it in two ways. What we've seen when other cities have gotten rid of arbitration, the politicians have swiftly moved to eliminate stations and eliminate firefighters.
Yeah, Devin touched on that. San Jose, in November 2010, had a binding arbitration initiative up on their ballot. We find ourselves in June of 2011. Now, that measure passed. Binding arbitration was repealed in San Jose. 66 officers in June were laid off. There were actually a reduction of 165 officers in San Jose. In terms of the question specifically in response times, now, we don't, reducing positions in and of itself is not subject to binding arbitration, but the effects it has on our employees is. Now, this city council has reduced positions in the police department, four of them, this last budget cycle. Two of them were police officers. At the same time, those city council members are creating new positions and spending money on neighborhood services personnel. So I think, those decisions that are being made, we have limited control over how they impact our working conditions. But the staffing reductions have happened, and they'll continue to happen. Dale Strobridge, when he started here in 1973, there were four officers on the street. That was the minimum staffing. Our minimum staffing today is four officers. We may have four tonight. I'm supposed to be working right now, and I've taken time off work to come attempt to provide some information to people. So when I go to work tonight and work my graveyard shift, most likely we're going to have four officers that handle this entire city. So if staffing is decreased, absolutely response times will increase, and they have increased over the past couple of years.
Let me answer that question by just commenting that a lot of very unfortunate outcomes are being forecast if binding arbitration goes away. Let us remember the 96% of all the cities in California do not have binding arbitration. 96% of all the cities in California are not falling apart.
And I would also point out, first off, San Jose still has binding arbitration. They did modify it. San Jose's had 10 years worth of budget deficits. Vallejo went bankrupt with binding arbitration. Gilroy, which is one of our comparison cities now, has had it for years. They've been going through layoffs, and they still have it on the books. In fact, that's one of they've been doing that for a couple of years because when I presented in 2009, they'd been laying off. It's all about the city gaining control of its costs, and I can guarantee you if we don't gain control of our costs, that's what threatens staffing. And binding arbitration has been a huge escalator for city costs. So binding arbitration is really the thing that risks staffing, not the opposite.
We'll start now with the pros. This person who's asking this question says that on the Citizens for Slow website, excuse me, Jan Marks and John Ewan are quoted as saying that more police and firefighters would be on the streets if measures A and B pass. Can you explain that?
Well, I doubt that John Ewan has... John Ewan or John Ashbaugh?
It says Jan Marks and John Ewan.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was thinking John Ashbaugh. Okay. I'm not familiar with the specifics of the quote.
This is from taken from the website, apparently. The Citizens for Slow website.
Since I haven't seen the quote, I don't know, and I hadn't asked them about that quote, so I'm afraid I can't respond.
Maybe let me just speculate. I'm not exactly sure. But if we did not have binding arbitration, there are a number of possible ways that City Council might respond to reducing the overall costs of the department. If you reduce the costs, make it more feasible for the city to hire more people, you would be able to afford, with the same amount of available funds, to actually hire more people. And I think that could actually happen. And it could happen more rapidly because you do not have the delays in implementing.
One thing I want to say, again, I'm not familiar with the quote. I think the important thing to come back to, when the binding arbitration went through, City Council had to counsel a planned neighborhood police patrol. So we know very well the effects of binding arbitration for that one award, higher pay to the police, and fewer police officers on the street. And I think that's what people should focus on.
Do you con people want me to repeat the question?
Please.
Okay. This is a quote from Jan Marks and John Ewan from the Citizens for Slow website, that more police and firefighters would be on the streets if measures A and B pass.
So you have two politicians playing politics with the numbers. The facts are simple. Before binding arbitration, it was okay to have two people on a fire engine. Before binding arbitration, it was okay if there wasn't a paramedic on every fire engine. Post-binding arbitration, neither of those is okay. Now, there's three people on every fire engine. Now, there's a paramedic on every fire engine. Now, in the downtown core, the critical downtown core, there's four people on that fire engine. So there's the difference right there. We have the example of pre-binding arbitration and now with binding arbitration. We don't have to speculate or play politics.
Yeah, I think we're talking about reductions in staffing. I think this council has demonstrated that they're willing to reduce staffing in the police department this year by four positions, two police officers, one dispatcher, and one field service technician. And as to what's going to happen, whether binding arbitration is repealed, I think that will depend on what council's priorities are. If council continues the priorities towards economic development, funneling money into art projects and taking money away from public safety, then there will be reductions in staffing. We talk about reduction in cost for employees. What's the alternative? Do we propose that we're going to pay our police officers minimum wage? We had a time when we were not able to hire police officers. Hopefully we never go back to that time where people are mandated overtime because we simply don't have the police officers at our city working on the streets because we can't recruit them. We can't attract them. And that is a potential in terms of what we could have depending on where council goes. I don't think anybody knows. We haven't heard what the real solutions are other than taking away a conflict resolution process that deals more with working conditions than it does with salary and benefits.
Thank you. I want to apologize to the people in the back who haven't been able to hear me read the questions because I was lazy and leaning back in my chair. I'll try to lean forward so you can hear me. This question, we're going to start with the cons. I read in the newspaper about police and firefighter salaries, and it includes a lot of overtime. Why are they working so much overtime?
I think it's important to note that one of the things that the police and firefighters have done to help in this economic time is to run short on some of our critical public safety staff. That's one of the concessions that we've made. It's not by choice. It's not ideal, but again, this is one of the things that your police and firefighters are willing to do to get through these tough economic times.
Yeah, recently, in addition to the reduction of the two police officers, we're running two vacancies at the police department. One is a police officer and one is a sergeant. Now, it's my understanding there's no plans that I'm aware of to hire those positions. So as Devin says, when you reduce staffing, you reduce the pool of people that are available to work those shifts, then overtime is going to be incurred. I think council has said this openly, that it's cheaper to staff the shift with overtime because they don't pay that employee's benefit package a second time. So one of the things about the comparison most recently with the LA comparison that Andrew's done, and I actually brought him some factual information from a real comparison of one of our police officers and what they would make in LA, and then Andrew looked on the state controller's website and talked about the median officer of a small department like ours versus the median officer of a 6,000 plus officer department. But I can guarantee you that the officers in LA aren't subject to the same overtime that the officers in San Luis Obispo are. We have a smaller group of bodies, so when we run short on staffing, we can't bring them over from another division or another area to cover those shifts without incurring overtime. As we sit now, when a sergeant goes on vacation, it's going to result in overtime. There's no other sergeant that can fill that shift other than one that's on his day off working overtime.
Okay. To the pro people.
Yes, let me start by reminding people that we have a $5.5 million deficit that the city was facing for each of the next 5 years. Something had to be done. Also recall that 80% of the city budget's costs are related to personnel costs. If you are going to do something about a deficit, you're going to have to address the number of people working for you and the rate of pay, things like pension costs. There's no way that the city can address those kinds of numbers without going after it. Yes, you do have to look at reducing costs. Yes, you do have to look at paying overtime because it is so expensive for the city to hire a full-time person.
Yeah, that's the real issue. I don't like the fact that our folks have to work overtime. I worry about them getting tired out. I worry about the impact on their families. But if the pension load is 48%, then you'd have to add the medical load on top of it. That's why you see the way to keep costs down is to have more overtime. Just some of those comparisons that were pointed out. This is from Controller Chang's website. In 2009, this is actual from W-2s, the median take-home pay in 2009 for San Luis Obispo police officers was $113,000. In L.A., it was $91,000. To give you a comparison, top of range for San Luis, $102,000. Arroyo Grande, $67,000. Atascadero, $69,000. Grover Beach, $63,000. Morro Bay, $68,000. Paso Robles, $69,000. Pismo Beach, $71,000. With that much of a gap, we don't have recruitment issues. I think all of us know Ian Parkinson, who's now our county sheriff. He was a captain here. He came over to SLO from Morro Bay.
Thank you. I'm going to do something just a little different. I have two questions that will be viewed as hostile, one side and one is the other. So I'm going to give you the hostile question, and I believe we are starting with the pro people. And here we go. Why is the city opposed to having an independent board make a decision if they can't reach an agreement? Isn't that fair?
That would be fair if that were the way it works, but it doesn't work that way. As I said, the arbiter tends to split the... basically, this is what happened. When we reached impasse, police officers put up 38 issues. The city put up 6. Some of them was resolved. In the end, the arbiter decided on 30. Basically, why did they throw so much up against the wall? Because they wanted to see what would stick. So what the arbiter did, there were 2 issues that were big money items. So he gave them the wage increase. They also wanted fully paid retiree health care, which exists at the state. The state right now has an unfunded liability of $60 billion for fully paid retiree health care. The city currently, for our partial pay, puts aside $500,000 a year. If we had fully paid, we'd have to put aside $3 million. So the arbiter, because the arbiter wants to get hired somewhere else for arbitration, ends up giving one side something and one side the other. That's why I say, if you go to arbitration, they know the worst they can do is our final and best offer. So when they went to arbitration, they knew they had 20% pay increases in the bag when inflation ended up being 11, and they took it and they hit pay dirt and got 30. That's why it's not a fair process.
And let me just add to this very quickly to remind people that the state Supreme Court has ruled binding arbitration unconstitutional in all general law cities. The reason? The arbitrator is not accountable to the voters.
Okay, here we go with for the con people. Why would I prefer to have financial decisions regarding a large portion of the city budget made by an unknown, uninvolved person as opposed to our elected officials?
Did you get a chance to respond to the other one?
Yeah, the other question. It's not the city that...
No, I want you to answer this one first.
Okay.
Then we'll go back.
Sure. It's not the city that opposes it. It's the politicians that oppose it.
Yeah, if you can repeat the question, I was
prepared to rebuttal on the question
that they had answered.
No, I'll allow rebuttals after you've answered this one. As a resident of San Luis Obispo, in other words, a voter in San Luis Obispo, why would I prefer to have financial decisions regarding... public safety employees made by an uninvolved, unknown person, as opposed to having our elected officials make those decisions?
Well, I think to touch on that and to correct the way the process works, it's a three-arbiter panel. That's what the process calls for. I believe the reason for that is to have a balance of the arbiters. In the case of... Why would you as a resident prefer to have that? I think it gives an independent oversight, and it takes away the full control of your public safety to at least give the professionals who do the job a seat at the table. It takes away that ability for three people on city council to make critical decisions with regard to your public safety, whether they be financial decisions or whether they have to do with staffing. I think it's important to have that outside oversight process, and it's not going to be one person who rides in from out of town and makes a sweeping decision based on no information. It's based on factual information and testimony that's presented at the hearings on each issue at hand.
Okay, I'm going to let now both sides have the rebuttal since you seem eager to do this. And the question that I gave to the con people, then now I will let the pro people respond to, and you'll have 2 minutes per side. As a resident of San Luis Obispo, why would I prefer to have major financial decisions regarding a large portion of the city budget made by an unknown, uninvolved person as opposed to our elected officials?
Well, obviously, I agree with the question. Why would you want to do that? The thing that we inherit, whatever our political views are, when we're elected to council, we tend to run for things. I ran for affordable housing and other issues, but you inherit this fiduciary responsibility. That's what we do. And basically, if you don't like what we're doing, as I said, you can vote us out of office. The arbiter, you can't overrule. We don't like that decision. I think it's nonsensical based on the numbers, but we're all stuck with it, not just council. You as the citizens, and what being stuck with it means is that we're spending a lot of money in one area and less in other areas. So I agree. Basically, binding arbitration to me is the opposite of the democratic process.
Okay, the cons. It's your time for a rebuttal to the question I asked them. Why would the city be opposed to having an independent board make the decision if they can't reach an agreement?
Again, we go back to what was passed by the voters. So the city is not opposed to this. It's the politicians that are opposed to this. This is something that is for the people, was put in the charter by the people, not the politicians.
Yeah, and just to touch on a couple of issues, I think, Andrew talked about the retiree health care and the splitting the baby issue with the arbitrator. It's absolutely not how the process works. The arbitrator doesn't split the baby. He doesn't feel compelled to rule for one party if he rules for the other party on another issue. The arbitrator or the arbitration panel would not be doing their job if they did that. They're to decide the issue on the merits of the information presented. That's part of the city charter. But let's talk about retiree health care. That's one of the things that Mr. Carter didn't include in his LA study. If I were an officer at Los Angeles Police Department, when I retire, I would have an $1,100 post-retirement health care, not what I get from the city, which I think is somewhere in the $94 range, if I remember correctly. But it's not $1,100 like Los Angeles gets. Also, we're talking about recruitment. He brought up all the local cities and what those officers make and what the recruitment is. Why then is this city council recruiting on a national recruitment for chief of police? Her retirement went up, and now we're doing a national recruitment. Does the cost savings issues and do those recruitment and retention issues only apply to the boots on the ground, or do they apply across the board at the line level and at the management? Because this compensation study singled out management. We're still going to treat management as the elite. We're going to recruit them from around the nation, and we're going to have their salaries compensated differently. It's interesting because the benchmark compensation study back in 2006, which was actually an evidence item.
Okay. You'll probably have time to conclude that thought when you get to your conclusions. We're going to have time for one, maybe two more questions. So let's start with this one, and it's the Con's turn to start. Does binding arbitration take the politics out of resolving public safety employee contracts?
Absolutely. It brings in, based on two key factors, it brings into the economy in specific of the city and of the state, and it also brings in the comparison cities, which are the gauge. So it takes politics out of it. Absolutely. You can't play politics with those numbers. You can't play politics with the comparison cities. You can't play politics with the number of firefighters. You can't play politics with the number of police officers. You can't play politics with paramedics or number of stations.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Devin. It does certainly take the politics out of the contract negotiation process. And it's only used when there is an impasse, an inability to reach an agreement between those two parties. So, the issues that come up are not strictly salary related. They're staffing related, and they have other issues. And will it be used in the future? I don't know. If council intends to impose working conditions that are absolutely unsafe for the citizens and for the police officers on the street, I can tell you that there will be a process to resolve that, hopefully, through binding arbitration. We've already, as police officers, in terms of binding arbitration, made commitments to the city during this process that we were willing to work with the city, and we wanted to sit down and work with the city instead of spending $110,000 to have a special election and deal with this issue. I thought our time would be better spent at the table talking about how to solve the problems rather than to take away a conflict resolution process. But as Devin said with his group, that simply hasn't happened on behalf of the city side. It's been brought forward from the two groups that binding arbitration applies to. But it hasn't been reciprocated by the city.
Sure, I'll be glad. This is the question now going to the pro people. Does binding arbitration take the politics out of resolving public safety concerns?
Go ahead.
Well, I think what it takes out of the process is democracy and voter control. Again, I keep coming back to the fact that you cannot overrule the out-of-town arbiter. Again, if you don't like a decision that an individual council member makes or the entire council member as a whole makes, you have a way to deal with that, and that's called an election that we have every 2 years, and you can vote us out of office. So the process, binding arbitration, again, is undemocratic.
I'd just like to add that the word politicians and politics is being thrown about as though it were a nasty thing that we ought to avoid. The fact of the matter is that this is democracy. We as citizens elect representatives who stand for us in making decisions. For the most part, I think they do an excellent job. I'm very proud that we have an election, a city council who represents us. That's what this is about. It's giving them the authority to work on our behalf.
Okay. I think this is the last question we're going to have time for. And I'm going to start with the pros, then go to the cons. What are the reasons for the city choosing to hold a special mail-in ballot election at a cost to the taxpayers of over $100,000 instead of putting it on the next general election ballot?
The reason, as I talked about earlier, is that we, after Labor Day, will go into labor negotiations with police department, Police Officers Association, with the Firefighters Union, and also with our all other employee union. And so we felt we needed to understand, and both sides needed to understand, what the rules of that negotiation process would be. So that's why we're holding it now. By having an all-mail ballot, it brings down the cost instead of having it at the polling place, and it also increases participation. Places that use this regularly, like Oregon, uses it for all of their elections, sees participation going up. What I would do is a compare and contrast of $100,000 for this election once for the binding arbitration award, ongoing every single year into perpetuity for 70 employees, is $2.5 million a year. So I think $100,000 versus the $2.5 million is quite a bargain.
Go ahead to the con side.
I think the only comment to that would be that Mr. Carter and the politicians are asking you to vote, to take away your right to vote.
Yeah, and in terms of, I believe the question was...
why the special election?
Right. Well, why the special election? Here's my opinion on that. The special election is in August because a large part of our population is out of town, the students. And why the mail-in ballot election? I think it's pretty apparent, based on the pace of what's occurred, that City Council was moving ahead at whatever rapid pace they could to get this process in front of the voters. I think part of the reason is they are using a current anti-employee, anti-public employee sentiment that's rampant in the nation right now. We've seen it all over the country where, you know, these attacks on public employees have come across the nation. So I think council is seeing that starting to wane. They're starting to see people realize, you know, that public employees, no different than anybody else, do a job for a compensation level that falls within a fair compensation level. And I don't think that the two groups that binding arbitration applies to have done anything to demonstrate to council that they are going to do anything other than work collaboratively with the city to work on the budget process. It's been the last 2 years, again, that the Police Officers Association has come forward, as well as the Firefighters Association, and not only made concessions, but offered additional concessions towards salary and benefit and pension issues. So I think we've done nothing to demonstrate to the city that they need to do this. I think this issue is about the council wanting to have full control of the process and be accountable to no one, to be able to impose a contract. And I think when Andrew talks about negotiations coming up, that's what he's talking about, imposing a contract that's unreasonable.
Okay. We're going to have time for the closing statements, and it works this way. Each speaker this time will have 2 minutes. I'll let the pros decide which one is going to go first, and I'll let the cons make that decision. But I'm going to go a pro speaker, a con speaker, a pro speaker, a con speaker. Before they start, in case you're thinking of running out early, I want to remind you of the donation box to help the league pay for the room. Okay, who's going to go for the pros first? Lauren is. All right.
I'd like to start off by thanking the City Council for organizing this election. I think this is an opportunity for the voters to express their opinion on two very important areas. You took a strong step, a courageous step to deal with what is a very serious deficit problem with the city budget. Particularly, I'd like to thank Andrew for all of the very hard work that he has done to accumulate a vast amount of information that has helped us understand the scope of the problem. In terms of the two measures, I'd like particularly to focus on binding arbitration. Back in 2000, this was on the ballot. It was presented to the voters to give something to the city fire and police. It was presented as a way to make it fair since they can't go on strike. This was very compelling. And it's also very natural for us to vote in support of our fire and police. Because who doesn't appreciate what they do for us? They protect us in all kinds of ways. So, of course, we are going to be supportive. So, binding arbitration got approved. Now, how did it turn out? I really don't think that the voters are pleased with the outcome. They deserve a chance to have a vote on this to confirm whether they want to retain it or not. Thank you.
Okay. Which con speaker is going first? Mattis? Okay.
Okay. One of the terms that's been used quite frequently is undemocratic, that this process is undemocratic. Here's what I think is undemocratic about what's occurred. We have a city council by majority who has brought forward an initiative to repeal a section of our city charter that was brought forward by the citizens, by the voters. And now you have that small minority. You have actually not even a majority of council that is on board with this. You have that group of people that is repealing something that was brought forward by the voters. In my mind, that's democratic. When you have a group that takes away something, a right that was provided by the voters by a simple decision-making process. What's also undemocratic is that council has created an entire new process for this. Does it concern anybody that council had passed a resolution to have a mail-in ballot on this issue when the process never existed? Is it something that just never was thought of before then, or is it something that's being pushed forward at a pace that tends to get people uninvolved, and the small group of people who might support council on this issue would be the only ones that vote. I think, lastly, the same people that want to take binding arbitration away are expecting that you trust them with the decisions regarding your public safety. Three of those members told the police and firefighters during the election process that they would not bring that issue forward as a council person to vote to put that issue on the ballot. Three of those same members did exactly what they said they wouldn't do and put those issues on the ballot. So myself, I don't trust them. That's simple. When you say something and do something else, it undermines trust. So I think it's going to be important for people to become educated and watch the process in the short time that we have.
Andrew.
All five council members put Measure A on the ballot, and again, a yes vote on that will facilitate pension reform and will help us gain control of our pension costs. Four of the five council members put Measure B on the ballot. A yes vote there will repeal binding arbitration. And what did we do? We said, let the people decide. We've seen what binding arbitration has brought us. We've seen how the city's costs have been run up with respect to the pension increases, and I've demonstrated them. And so we are asking the people to decide, now that we have evidence of what takes place with binding arbitration, now that we know that pensions, if we don't change them, will be 20% of our budget within 5 years, more than we're spending on the fire department alone, if we don't make changes, we're giving the people a chance to weigh in. And quite frankly, what council is doing is saying, please help us control our costs. We're telling you these are the tools. A yes vote on both of these measures are the tools we need to try to gain control of the city's costs. So again, we can provide you the services that you expect. I'll come back to what happened, what we had to cut with that binding arbitration award, $4 million cost the first year, 7 employees. We had to cut $1.6 million out of street and sidewalks. Year in, year out, when we do surveys, that's one of the things that is most key to people. We had to take out $600,000 in flood protection projects, $300,000 in parks and open space projects, $500,000 in public safety. And again, what did we do? We had to cancel a neighborhood nighttime police patrol. Again, what binding arbitration led to? Higher costs for each police officer, higher pay, fewer people on the street. So please help us gain control of our costs. Please vote yes on A and yes on B.
Devin.
Citizens of San Luis Obispo, you have two measures before you, Measure A and Measure B. Both strip sections that are current in the Charter or San Luis Obispo Constitution, as you will. Number one is Measure A, which literally removes your right to vote on this issue. We've heard this is democracy. We've heard this is a mistake. What this is vital to the voters. This is what the citizens need. This is what we need now. We don't need politicians. We need the voters to decide this. And removing your right to vote does none of that. Measure B is again stripping the section of the Charter that was put in by the citizens. It's a measure that we've seen positive change from. Arbitration has brought us higher levels of service to the citizens. It's provided for a better public safety, more paramedics, more firefighters. The level of service has increased. I'm going to yield the rest of my time to...
No, it was 2 minutes to speaker, and he had his 2 minutes.
He still has more time.
Okay.
Finish it.
All righty. Again, citizens of San Luis Obispo, we urge a no vote on Measure A to protect your right to vote on this vital issue, and we urge a no vote on Measure B to take politics out of public safety and ensure that all of the citizens here get the highest level of service that they deserve and demand. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming and speaking tonight. As a league member, I really feel I must thank you for the civil discourse on what I know is a very hot topic. I don't live here in San Luis Obispo, but I do read the newspaper, and I know it's a very hot topic for all of you. And I appreciate the calm and reasoned way tonight you presented the information so people can make a judgment on how to vote when their ballots come. I want to thank the league team who worked to put this on, and especially I want to thank the person who organized it all, Vera Wallen. Vera lives in Cambria. Cayucas. Oh, I made that mistake before. Anyway, Cayucas, but she doesn't live here in town. And she is going, she has some closing remarks about the video and smart voter and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, thank you all for coming. I want to also thank AGP Video for being here and filming this. This will be played gavel to gavel on Channel 21 throughout the month of August, so watch for it. Tell your friends that couldn't come that they can go there. It also will be available at www.slowspan.org. You can also see the schedule of when it's going to be on the television by going to that website. You also can find out the schedule because lots of people don't have internet. I know we don't like to believe that, but you know there are people like that. If they call the office of AGP, so there is a phone number. You can look it up in the phone book, but it's 772-2715, and they will tell you the schedule. Smart Voter is a website thing that the league does. There is information now about Measures A and B on there. There will be additional information because I'm sure people will add more to it. It's that kind of a website, so I want you to know about that. I want to thank Parks and Rec for the space here. Very reasonable. We have voter registration forms back here. If you change your address, change your name, moved, you got a kid that's going to turn 18, take a voter registration form for them and get them to fill it out and get it in. Voter registration for this election up till the 15th of August. Okay? And most important of all, vote. Everybody vote. Okay? Thank you for being here tonight.